Hello, WHO. This is Herb Plambeck, your war correspondent, greeting Bill Diamond and the Corn Belt Hour audience from Paris, and wondering just how things are back there on Midwestern acres and farmsteads. By the same token, many of you may be wondering just what's taking place in the realm of agriculture here in France. With that in mind, this program will deal with those farm observations I have had occasion to make during my short time here. Let me hasten to add that as a correspondent accredited to our forces, my army responsibilities obviously come first. However, in what limited time I may have between assignments and otherwise, I certainly shall keep my ears and eyes open to learn and report all I can about farming and food production here. As a farm boy, privileged as I am to work for the best agricultural radio station in the world, and with the most progressive farm families to be found anywhere, I deeply appreciate this opportunity. And as the first American farm editor to have this chance, I recognize my obligation both to the services and to agriculture. What I have seen of French agriculture so far has largely been from the window of a giant C-54, the plane on which we made the trip over here, and from jeeps, military trucks, and buses that I've been on since landing. While flying over Brittany, Normandy, and one or two other provinces of this interesting country, it was our good fortune to have perfectly clear weather. This enabled me to make some farmland observations, although a mile or so in the air is a bit distant to get details. Nevertheless, it was evident that, except where bombs had fallen, or where war had left other scars, as it certainly did in Normandy, France, like our own Corn Belt and like England, boasts a beautiful countryside. Spring is just beginning, and the greening pastures and hedgerows, along with picturesque farmsteads, made for an interesting, though irregular, checkerboard down below. At the same time, it marked a sharp and welcome contrast to the snow-laden fields of Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana I had seen only a few days earlier. In noting the quaint farm courtyards, much like those I saw in Ireland, Scotland, and England in 1943, and very unlike our own, it's evident the buildings are old and of brick or stone construction. They're pretty, though, with their red tile roofs and cream or gray-colored walls, and they look neat, at least from the distance. Later during my tour of duty, after I add more magic words to my decidedly limited French vocabulary, I hope to see some of the farmsteads, livestock, and crops at closer range. For the moment, we'll deal with French agriculture in general. Perhaps those of you with sons or close friends here have already heard from them about the things they've seen during their march on through to Hitler's Reich. But I'm afraid many of the boys have been too busy to pay much attention to the snow-blanketed or mud-caked farmlands they passed over. Right now, with the weather moderating and with buds forming, the boys in some areas are finding things pleasanter and prettier. Early flowers are blooming, as are the forsythias, all of which reminds me this is going to be one year in which I'll not get to enjoy the jonquils, tulips, and violets so welcome each spring around the little white house on 51st Street. Before I indicate too much early homesickness, though, let's get on with general French farm observations. During a brief period between army arrangements, a government driver took me through old narrow streets and avenues, leading every which way to the French Ministry of Agriculture. On arrival, I was met by Monsieur Michael Sepid, a most courteous gentleman about 40 who had spent nearly 3 years in a Nazi prison camp. He wore dark-rimmed spectacles and was smooth-shaven down to the edge of his chin, where he had a beard from ear to ear, much like some of our granddads did. The office, like every other place here, was cold. Coats were kept on. Fortunately, Monsieur Sepid speaks quite good English. Only a few times were we in difficulty, and then by a combination of French, English, and German, plus some pictures I drew and gestures made, we got squared away. First of all, I learned some 40% of the population in France is rural, and that the farmers here are referred to as peasants. Evidently, they're quite poor. Anyway, I'm told strict application of international law prevents Nazi prisoners of war from working on French farms because the peasant living standards are too low. With labor so short here, and with Nazis having taken over 2 million Frenchmen as prisoners and forced laborers, this didn't quite add up to me. Like our own nation, France has numerous general areas in which she raises different products. Brittany and Normandy, for instance, are in the dairy belt. Southwestern, central, and southern France have vast acreages of grapes, producing the famous Cognac and Armagnac brandies, and the Burgundy and other wines. Around Paris and toward the direction where our 9th, 1st, and 3rd armies are, is a sort of opened plain section where wheat, oats, and beets are grown. Eastern France claims the little corn belt, where maize, as they call it, is said to mature. Tobacco is grown toward the Strasbourg section, where our 7th Army is found, and south of that. Fruits and vegetables are grown in many different localities. Products raised in France, in a general order of importance, are wheat and grapes first, followed by potatoes, sugar beets, forage crops, vegetables, fruits, oats, and finally corn. As for livestock, dairy and beef cattle seem to rate first, with horses, sheep, and hogs next in order. Frankly, I haven't seen much livestock yet, but the area I came over is said to have been badly plundered by the enemy. France, like our own country and like Britain and other nations, is faced with many critical shortages, but to a much greater extent than we. We must remember that for over 4 years, France was in enemy hands, and wherever we turn, there's evidence of Nazi occupation and atrocity. Livestock, machinery, and trucks, as well as manpower, were taken to Germany. Hundreds of thousands of horses, only source of French farm power, went to Hitler. Much worse than that, countless farmsteads were destroyed, some by the Nazis and others by us, inevitably, of course, during invasion. And even much worse than that, thousands of peasants and their families, members of the peasant resistance movement, were annihilated and their homes burned when the Germans found them providing food or lodging for the Mackies and the Free French. In some cases, entire farm villages were destroyed. On a later program, I plan to tell you a more complete story of the heroic part farm people of France had in resisting the enemy and of helping the Allies, even at the cost of their own lives and farms. It's one of the most thrilling stories I've ever heard and deserves an entire report to itself. Meanwhile, a few more quick summarizations. Shortages of labor, machinery, fertilizers, and seed are very serious here, much more so than at home. French farm production has gone down drastically in recent years. That's partly because the peasants refused to comply with Nazi demands. Even though it meant hunger to them, they kept acreages and yields down. As Sepid pointed out, the peasants made 1 million acres vanish fast. They sabotaged crops, hid stock, falsified figures, and did other things. And the net result was, in 1944, compared to the 10-year average before the war, they produced 44% less potatoes, 11% less hay and grass, and 18% less wheat. Only in oil crops and legumes did the Nazis succeed in registering gains. Even Hitler's adoption of a collective farming plan failed. The French just wouldn't cooperate. And it takes teamwork in everything, as Hitler should know full well by now. There's much more to be said about the land that was mined or is growing Rommel asparagus, a term used to describe the obstacles put up in fields to prevent Nazi paratroopers from landing. There's an interesting story on farm prices, size of farms, and on black marketing, on transportation shortages, on livestock, and about crops. But these reports must wait a bit. Right now, I'm on my way to forward areas to be with some of your boys in the 3rd Army somewhere on the Western Front. With me will go what looks like a ton of field equipment, including the heavy steel helmet that helped take Jack Shelley safely through his dangerous assignment in the Bulge. and also a prize-winning ear of Iowa corn. Some of your boys will surely enjoy seeing. Planning to report to you from a forward area soon, and reassuring those interested, I'll be plenty careful. This is Herb Plambeck in Paris, returning you to Des Moines.
Hello, Blue New York, NBC. Okay, swell. We have a spot for you very shortly for Arturo Descui. So we'll be standing by with you. Righto. Jason Parra standing by with NBC New York. Hello, NBC. Mr. Despuy is not here. Mr. Despuy is not here as yet, but he should be dashing in shortly.